This is the Concealed Carry Podcast, episode number 22. Welcome to the Concealed Carry Podcast, part of the USA Firearm Training Network, and I am your host, Riley Bowman.
Riley, the man who loves sushi, and I am Jacob Paulson.
Jacob is the guy who does not like being barefoot ever.
Really?
Hate it.
Oh my gosh.
Jacob is such an interesting cat. I am so privileged to know you.
Because my wife won't let me wear my shoes in the house, I have a separate pair of shoes that are inside shoes.
Nice.
No way. So no, you've never worn a pair of like flip-flop sandals?
Only when I was in Brazil. I otherwise pretty much avoid them.
Wow. So you guys have probably noticed we have another voice on the show here today, which is Brandon Scott with Brave Response Shooting.
Hello, everyone.
Brandon is the man who is addicted to Cerakote.
I am so...
He is Cerakoting everything these days.
Oh my gosh, I am so addicted to Cerakote. We have just been having a heck of a time with this FFL that I work with, Taft Precision. You should follow them on Instagram. oh my gosh, so much fun to get these guns in. We did this AR-15 for a police officer down in Texas where we did a blue line. And so it was AR-15. So it was a black, we coated all the parts, just a regular standard black. And then we did like silver stars on the handguard.
Yeah.
And then this, silver stripes on the upper and lower receiver with a blue line that started at the lower end of the hand grip, a handguard, and went all the way back. Kind of split the upper and lower receiver all the way back to the back of the stock. It was so cool.
Wow.
It's fun.
That sounds really cool.
It's a fun time. Yeah.
Sounds like an AR that I'd like to have. So very cool. We are so glad that you're joining us again today
for
this episode,
me.
Brandon. And we are also so thankful to all of our listeners for joining us for episode 22. I don't think we ever thought we would get this far. But, we are still going strong here. Today's topic is, I got my permit, now what? Mostly intended for newer CCWers, but good for all gun owners. We talk today through the most important things someone needs to do after and when they get their permit. All this and more coming up on the Concealed Carry Podcast. But first, today's episode is featuring the American Gun Law Course. This online training course about everything gun law related will prepare you legally for much less money than an hour's worth of your local attorney. More information coming up later in the podcast. Alrighty, so let's get into today's topic. So like I was talking about in the beginning, today's topic is, I got my permit, now what? We're going to break this down into a whole slew of different categories. But I'm going to ask you guys first. Let's start with Jacob. Now, Jacob, let's just say you just got your permit. Now, in Colorado, that means you would have taken a basic CCW handgun safety course. But what's your next step, man? What do you do next?
Well, I'm thinking back when I actually got my first permit. And I think it's really hard to see beyond the actual permit for the student. I think when you're approaching that process, you make some sort of decision about, I'm going to go, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take that one class I have to take. I'm going to get that permit I have to get. And then I'm going to like do stuff. But what that stuff is pretty cloudy in the mind. I think the average person, you don't see beyond that piece of plastic getting into your wallet. Once that plastic comes and it gets into the wallet, then you just kind of feel like, I guess now I like carry around a gun, or I guess now I, whatever it is I intended to do, maybe some people I'm certainly willing to recognize they get that permit and that gun just goes into the car, or just they feel better about having it in the house or something. But I think most people just don't see beyond it at all. And so once that piece of plastic is in hand, it's sort of like, okay, I guess, I got to like move forward.
That's a really good way of explaining it. I really like the way you phrase that. You know, the whole, they have a hard time seeing beyond the permit. Now, there's a quote. I say this in nearly every class I teach where I say, for many of you here today, this is your end goal. This is like, you know, you had to get to the class. You know, you're going to apply for a permit and you'll get your permit. And for you, that's it. That's the end of the road. And I try to explain to them that, no, really, this is just the beginning. Like, you just cracked the door open on this journey that I hope lasts the rest of your life of, you know, responsible self-defense. That, to me, is what a permit is, you know, or your initial training, is that it's just a crack in the door. And what's on the other side of the door? Oh, wow, it's a whole bunch of stuff. And there's a path, and it's a lifelong path of this being a lifestyle that's much more than just having a piece of plastic or a piece of paper.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. So let's start by talking about what are some of those things on the other side of the door. Like, I suspect maybe the in my mind, the way it makes sense to kind of address this is to talk about purchases. You know, what are some of the first things that Gun Owner probably needs to have in order to, you know, embark on the journey?
Yeah, you know, are we assuming that someone's already purchased a gun? Or are we just assuming that they haven't even purchased a gun? Because, you know, sometimes we get students like that where they're coming to a class, you know, and sometimes they're just coming through that class just so they can get some insight on what type of gun they should purchase.
So let's say that this person that we're, this theoretical person we're talking about has purchased a firearm and has received their permit and has taken a basic concealed weapons permit class as per their state restrictions. That's it.
Okay. I would say, based on that, and I think that's a great assumption to have made, so I'm glad we clarified that, I would say that for most people, that they are probably thinking, you know, after they've got the gun, you know, holster. I need a good holster.
Yeah. Well, for me, I want to start with, as even though, you know, coming from the holster manufacturer guy, I would recommend first to start with safety. Safety first. And so, you know, one of the core safety rules is to always keep all firearms inaccessible to unauthorized persons, right? And so one of the first things that we want to do is we want to make sure that that we have a way to keep that firearm safe and only accessible by people who are authorized to use it. Now, you know, every single firearm these days is going to come with a basic gun lock, right? So you can take that, and depending on how you are trained, you can either put the cable lock through the barrel and out the extraction port, you know, the ejection port, or up through the grip and through the ejection port and down, however it is that you're trained, or, you know, like if it's a revolver, through the barrel or instead through one of the firing chambers so that you can't close the cylinder on the revolver, right? But, well, that's a good solution. I would recommend some type of a safe, especially for a pistol or a handgun. I would recommend as one of the first purchases you make, being a $100 to $200 small safe that you could put on your on your nightstand. That's the word that I'm looking for. Something where, you know, it's a little bit faster to access, you know, because it's like, you know, the story that, always comes to my mind is, okay, I wake up in the middle of the night and bad guys in my bedroom. Oh crap, I need to find my keys and I need to find my magazine and find my gun and I need to unlock my cable lock and pull it out and put the magazine in and load the gun. You know, that's not going to set me up for success in that scenario. And so finding a safe to where, you know, my little girl can't get at it, but I can just go over beep, 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 and boom, I have my loaded firearm all set and ready to go. I think that's one of the first purchases in a handful of first purchases of a new gun owner that needs to be really high on the priority list.
That's a good point. And I agree with you. I don't think that a person should ever buy a gun without also, you know, buying a safe, of course. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the thought I was having when you were talking. well, or really two thoughts, really. Number one is that I see a lot of times people come through my basic concealed carry courses in particular that many of them have been lifelong shooters, but they've been more focused on like hunting rifles and shotguns and, you know, hunting and stuff. And so they probably already have a safe.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably some big 800-pound safe where they keep all their rifles and shotguns, and they might have a couple of handguns. They're probably going to keep them in that safe. And I'm trying to say that, hey, you know, you might want to consider some of these, you know, I call them quick access safes. I think they serve a purpose, an important one. It allows you to store responsibly a firearm and also still be able to access it quickly when you need it. You know, you're only going to find me without a gun on my person when I'm asleep. You know, that is a time of vulnerability for me personally. And so I will definitely have a quick access safe so that I can, you know, during that time of vulnerability, so that, you know, boom, I've got that quick access to a gun, you know, that's ready for use.
Yeah.
And also, too, related to that, you know, sometimes we talk a lot about on this podcast about protection of children, which is definitely an issue. You know, just a week ago here in the Denver area, there was a little boy that was shot, you know, by a gun that belonged to his father. And that should just never happen. You know, but I also recognize that we also have a lot of listeners to this podcast that don't necessarily have children or don't have children around. But keep in mind, it's not just children we're concerned about. You know, if your home was ever to get broken into, you know, even if you are at home or away from home, you are at risk of that gun falling into the hands of a criminal. And that is also something we really want to prevent. I definitely agree with you there, Brandon. That's good stuff. Now, next, I would say that for me personally, you know, I talked about it last time in our last podcast episode, in episode number 21, where our training tip was practicing reloads. And for that to be even possible, I think we should have a bunch of spare magazines.
Absolutely.
You know, I think here is the Riley T. Bowman absolute minimum magazine count I think you should have is 3 for each gun. You know, and ideally, I think you should have 5 magazines per your hand, you know, per handgun.
Totally agree.
And in some cases, I have more than that. But absolutely, you have got to have at least 3 spare magazines for every semi-automatic handgun that you own. Now, ideal is more like 5 or more. And the reason why I think that is an ideal quantity of magazines to have on hand is that over time, you know, those magazines are going to, you know, they're going to wear out. They're going to need to be replaced. You know, the magazine springs are going to wear out. The follower is going to wear out, you know, or for whatever reason, a magazine breaks. Well, you got a backup that you can fall back on. You've got, you know, if you've only got a couple of magazines, you know, 1 or 2 that just came with a gun, if one of those goes down, it's down. You don't have anything to replace it with. So I definitely think having at least 3 and more like 5 or more magazines per gun is a good idea.
Totally. I think that's great.
Yeah, I love that you guys talked about home storage. It's probably first and foremost. Love the idea of spare magazines. Very important. I'm thinking about the tools that the gun owner needs in order to go to the range and practice live fire. So eyewear, earwear, and a good range bag are the first things that come to my mind.
Yeah.
Targets, potentially, depending on whether or not, you know, the place you're going to go provides targets or doesn't, or if you can buy them there or where it's most affordable. But I think good eyewear, good earwear, and a good range bag. Range bag is something we don't talk a lot about, but I think a range bag is really valuable because it ensures that, A, you never forget to take anything with you that you intend to have with you at the range. It also prevents you from, I'll call it, you know, cross-contaminating different bags that you might one day walk through airport security with. So a dedicated range bag, that the only purpose that bag serves is to take your gear to and from the range, is a really good idea. And having multiple pairs of safety glasses and, you know, good ear protection is going to go a long way to keeping you and anyone else who might be with you and forget theirs
absolutely safe. Well, and once you get to the range, you know, you're going to want to go out and actually shoot that firearm. And so, you know, along with the range bags and to fit with the spare magazines, I think the next thing is choosing the right ammo. So your first range trip with your brand new gun would be selecting a good concealed carry or personal defense ammo. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, we want to, like, you know, watch YouTube videos about the G2 rip round or, you know, all these different rounds that are, you know, that are exciting and fun and interesting. But what we don't realize is I have seen in certain firearms, they prefer a certain type of personal protection round over another. And especially, like, you know, maybe in the beginning, my little 9mm prefers, you know, X brand of personal protection rounds. But then as I shoot it, you know, I carry concealed and I go out shooting and I go training, right? Because we don't ever want to train with our personal protection. You know, we can't train with our personal protection rounds anyway. I can't. I don't have that kind of finances to allocate to training. but as we go out and train, then we're going to bring that gun through its break-in period. And so I've seen instances where the individual, you know, went and purchased their first firearm and they bought a couple of different brands of personal defensive rounds. They ran a couple of mags of those personal defense rounds through their firearm to say, okay, yep, my gun cycles these rounds with a high level of, you know, with 100% level of reliability. And, you know, I feel accurate. I feel good about the recoil of these rounds. But then as they, you know, take a break from shooting personal protection rounds and shoot practice ammo, that gun goes through its break-in period. And then now it doesn't want to cycle those original personal protection rounds anymore. And so, you know, choosing, you know, testing out those personal protection rounds and making sure that they cycle through your gun, that they cycle in your mags, you're not getting hung up, you're not having any kinds of issues, and that you're comfortable with the recoil, because a lot of times personal protection rounds are going to have a different feel, a different felt recoil than your just regular target rounds.
That's a great suggestion. And, you know, it's one that I think is easily overlooked by many newer handgun shooters, in particularly for self-defense. I suspect that there's many people that, you know, they get the training, they get the gun, and then they go out and they buy one or two boxes of hollow point self-defense, you know, personal protection rounds, and they load up their gun and never shoot them. Mm-hmm. I think that happens all the time.
Yeah.
Totally. And that is really scary because, you know, how do you know that those rounds are actually going to function in your gun? So that's a really good suggestion. I'm going to go ahead, though, now and just back up a tiny, tiny bit. I know you kind of mentioned it, Jacob, but, you know, here's another Riley T. Bowman suggestion. And I just thought of this. But I think this is a next steps kind of purchase for, you know, after you just got your permit. And I think that is electronic hearing protection. You know, the kind where it amplifies the sounds around you that you'd like to hear. Mm-hmm. But when you start to fire rounds or have other loud noise around you, it cuts out the harmful noise. Electronic hearing protection is, I think, just an absolute must. And particularly, you know, we talk about how important it is to get more training and to go through more training courses. And so one thing that is very valuable for going through training is to have that electronic hearing protection so that you can hear the instructions that are being given by instructors and hear those that are around you. And, you know, also, too, there are actually training courses out there and training schools where, you know, before they'll even let you attend a course with them, you've got to have electronic hearing protection to go through their course. Because for them, you know, they see it as it being a safety issue. And it really is, because if you can't hear the instructions that's being given, then that is potentially a safety issue.
Yeah, the safety component of the electronic hearing protection is, in my opinion, one of the biggest, just because you want to be able to hear the commands of the range master. And, you know, if you can't hear the ceasefire command,
totally,
then that could potentially cause a pretty serious accident.
Yep. Awesome.
Now, I know you guys talked. Can I interject here? I know you guys talked about chambered and not chambered a couple of episodes ago. And so, you know, if anyone who's listening to this hasn't listened to episode 18 about carrying around chambered or not chambered, I just wanted to mention this just because I think it's a question that I get from a lot of my students about, well, geez, you know, what do you, you know, do you carry around in the chamber? Do you carry it in the magazine? And for me, you know, I started out when I first took my concealed carry class and I got my permit, I would say that the first 6 or 8 months, I carried my firearm without a round in the chamber, and just because I was nervous about it, right? You know, go back, listen to episode 18 and get to the point where you're comfortable carrying around in the chamber and just have confidence in the fact that, you know, firearms manufacturers these days, they can't have their guns going off just like you can't have their your gun going off. And these things are manufactured to an extremely high level of reliability. And the level of readiness that you will have by carrying a round chambered and getting to that point where you're comfortable having a round chambered in the firearm is going to be a lot more beneficial in the event that you actually have to use your firearm. So I just wanted to interject that in.
True. Yep. Good point.
How dare Brandon tell us to go back and listen to old podcast episodes.
Yeah, way to go, Brandon.
Love it. I think an interesting one, I debated whether or not to bring this up because my fear is that a lot of people would say, oh, Jacob, you're so right. I'll go buy one of those. But it requires a lot of instruction and training to know how to use it well. So I'll add that disclaimer. But I think a rail light for a home defense gun. I'm not suggesting your everyday carry around, you know, in your concealed carry gun, you need to have a rail light. But I do think for a home defense firearm that I expect to be able to respond with, you know, in the home, on that gun, I do think you need a rail light. But it does require a certain skill set or amount of education or training to know how to use that rail light properly. So I think that's something relatively high up on that list as well.
Can I make a modification to that?
Fire.
I think not only a rail light, perhaps, but also maybe just like a good quality tactical flashlight.
Sure.
You know, something that's pretty bright, you know, something on the order of maybe a minimum of like 200 lumens or so, you know, and also a good tactical flashlight has got to also have what I call a tactical switch. You know, a button where it's got a momentary on, you know, where you push the button and the light will come on, and you release and it comes off. None of this clicky, 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 you know, sort of stuff where you're going through your home and, you know, maybe in the middle of the night and you've heard a bump of the night, you're trying to clear your house or at least just check on things, and you're walking through the house and you're going click, 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 click. No, 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 no. That's such a terrible idea. So anyway, you need to get a good tactical flashlight with a momentary on and off. You know, it's fine if you press harder and it clicks on and stays on, but it's got to have just that momentary on and off as an option. Now, also, it's a good idea, I think, to have a tactical rail light. In fact, you know, I keep both right there in my quick access safe. I mean, when I'm putting my handgun away for the night, putting it in my little safe, I put a tactical light on the rail. And I will also keep in that safe, along with my gun and my tactical rail light, a basic but bright and good quality tactical light as well. In the nighttime, in the dark, that is more so than your gun, your best friend. If you do not have a light, you cannot really use your gun effectively. And sometimes having that second tactical light is just hugely valuable, you know, so you don't necessarily have to point your gun at whatever it is you're trying to illuminate. And as you mentioned, Jacob, it does require additional training, you know, to really effectively use lights in a tactical situation. I would say, as a segue, that would be an encouragement for getting additional training, particularly, you know, like a night shoot or something, you know, a low light shoot. That would be huge for a lot of people.
Yeah, this is interesting. I can tell you, as a firearm training company, which we work with a large number of instructors in a lot of different parts of this country, this is one of those like pet peeve, like I get upset about it topics. I just don't understand why such a high percentage, and by high percentage I mean like 99.8% of people who come through a basic course and get a permit don't feel inclined to spend money to pursue an ongoing additional higher level training.
Totally. I could not agree more. I mean, you know, one of the things that I try and hammer in my class is this is not where we achieve the comfort of skill at arms. Like, we're going to sit down, we're going to talk for 4, 5, 6, 8 hours, depending on what state you're in, or, you know, you're going to have a brief conversation with your sheriff there, your local sheriff. The thing about the concealed weapons permit and this whole program is the onus and the due diligence is really on the shoulders of us as good law-abiding citizens to seek out additional training. I mean, for me personally, I think the Second Amendment has a heck of a lot more due diligence associated with it than any other constitutional right. Like, so if I'm going to exercise my freedom of speech, I can pretty much just type whatever I want into my Facebook page and press enter, and then all of my friends have to deal with my freedom of speech, right? Or, you know, to exercise my freedom of religion, I can show up somewhere, or I can, you know, I could even just open up a religious text and start reading in the privacy of my own home, right? So there's not like a whole lot of due diligence associated with a lot of constitutional rights out there. But with the Second Amendment, I mean, there's a lot of right ways and wrong ways, and there's a lot of kind of pitfalls, and there's a lot of really old information that's not necessarily bad, but just old and not, you know, it's good, better, best. It's just kind of good, not better or best. Right.
You know, in other industries don't have this problem. Like, I don't know what it is about firearm training that we have this issue, because if you look at darn near anything else that people pursue, the industry has done a good job of explaining and teaching that you need ongoing courses and training. I mean, if you go take a swimming class, you know, my kids don't take that first little swimming class and say, great, now I can go swim the Pacific. You go to the gym and you're like, I want to beef up. You're not going to hire a personal trainer for one session and say, I'm good to go now. You know, most industries, they've just done a good job of teaching and, you know, communicating that this is an ongoing process. But in our industry, I think we've done a poor job. And so mission critical. You got to pursue more training.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm so glad you brought that up.
Yeah, yeah. Great. I mean, you know, for me personally, I've made it my own personal goal, and I don't want to prop myself up too much, but I'm not going to necessarily suggest that everybody has got to do this, but it probably isn't a bad approach. Now, for me personally, I have made it a goal to attain 80 hours of training of handgun, self-defense, or whatever. You know, it's tactical self-defense, you know, handgun training.
Oh, that's a good goal.
Yeah, phenomenal.
Nice.
You know, and it's not really that hard for me to achieve that. You know, I usually get a lot of those opportunities naturally just because of the law enforcement work that I'm involved in. But it does take some discipline to make sure that I stick with that goal and that I actually follow through and attend a lot of those training opportunities.
You know what we should do, Riley? I should let's match that goal and let's have because we can track the hours that we've spent and the courses through our USA Firearm Training app, right?
Yeah.
And what we should do is we should track those through our apps like we're already doing, but we need to compare it at the end of the year. Yeah.
You're right.
And if we met the goal, whoever didn't meet the goal has to buy the other one dinner or lunch at like Ruth's or something.
Oh, shoot. Wow.
Sounds like a little offline betting to be done here.
We should do that. We should definitely do that. Cause I mean, there's times that, you know, you spend so much time training and, you know, trying to just, you know, teach everybody else that like, I will get starved for just, please, somebody just tell me what to do, you know, show me something cool or neat or interesting. I think that's huge. Let's do that. It's on.
Nice.
80 hours.
All right. It's on. I'm excited now. Totally stoked. So what's up next? You know, Brandon, I know you just got done talking, but I think it's kind of your turn as far as, what's the next thing you're going to do, you know, now that you got your permit?
You know, now you need to go and choose a good concealed weapons permit holster. Now, I'm going to begin this out by saying there, in my experience of producing and selling a concealed weapons holster that's pretty awesome, mm-hmm. there is no concealed weapons permit solution. You know, there is no There is no holster solution that's going to be the exact right solution for everybody out there.
Yeah.
In fact, the way that I kind of describe it is like, no matter what, like, you know, let's say, okay, well, up to this point, I'm 22 years old. I'm taking my very first, you know, I'm receiving my permit. I've taken my firearms class. Up until this point, my lifestyle has not included carrying a concealed weapon whatsoever. Right.
Sure.
And so, you know, choosing to carry a concealed weapon is a little bit of a lifestyle change. And part of that lifestyle change is where are you going to carry and how are you going to carry that firearm? Right. So like if you're going to carry on your waist, then it stands to reason that probably your pants are going to need to be able to accommodate the extra mass of a firearm and some magazines underneath your waistband. So maybe you have to buy an extra, you know, maybe one or two sizes up of pants. Or if I'm going to carry on my shoulders, well, now the rules change. You know, if I'm going to carry in a shoulder holster, well, it has to be, you know, I want to keep it concealed because the strength of my permit is the fact that it's concealed, right? Or the strength of my firearm is the fact that I'm the only one that knows it's there. And so now the rules change where, okay, I'm going to carry on a shoulder rig, well, now my coat doesn't come off. Or I'm going to carry on my ankle. Well, you know, maybe now I don't wear shorts. You know, I mean, there's all these kinds of little things and adjustments that we have to do. And that's why there's so many holsters out there, is because there's so many different ways that people will capitulate their lifestyles to accommodate firearms ownership in their general lifestyles. And so,
yeah, and obviously, you know, with everything you've done in the holster industry, you know, you are well versed to be able to speak to that. I was just going to say that, you know, this is a decision that's going to have to be made for every individual. It's going to be a little different in their approach as far as what works for them, what they're comfortable with, as far as how they carry concealed. But I will throw out there also that particularly if you are a newer CCWer, you should give some thought to, and I just want to emphasize that at least have it cross your mind and give some thought to, if possible, carry near your waist on your strong side, because that is going to be the quickest and most reliable way of drawing quickly. I know I was kind of redundant there, but and presenting to the target or the threat effectively and reliably, you know, so at least spend some time giving that some thought.
Yeah, totally. That's perfect. Like I'm so glad you brought that up, because like first place is going to be appendix carry, right? Your hands are right there. Super easy, super fast. And you know, first place for speed of presentation is going to be appendix carry, carrying the firearm in the front. Second place for speed of and effectiveness of presentation is going to be strong side inside the waistband. Third place is going to be somewhere on your torso, you know, somewhere from waist to shoulder, you know, waist to armpits, carrying somewhere in there. And then fourth place for speed and effectiveness of presentation is going to be like ankle or off body, like in a purse or something.
Well,
like that.
What about a pocket holster?
Yeah, a pocket. Yeah, good point.
You know, they're kind of tricky to draw from sometimes, but you know, but you didn't mention it, so I thought I'd throw it out there.
Yeah.
I do like pocket holsters as far as, you know, the one advantage that they've got is that, you know, you're in a situation where you think, you know, I think I might need my gun here, maybe in this situation. I'm a little bit uneasy, but it's not really quite time for me to be able to, you know, I'm not legally justified to actually draw and use that gun yet. Well, it's kind of nice to be able to put my hand in my pocket and have it right there on the gun, you know, ready for use if necessary.
Yeah. You're the only guy that knows you're ready to go too.
Yeah. I love what you said about holsters, guys. I think that's really important. I also think that inevitably, no matter how much, you know, how much we try, like no matter how much new CCWers do their best to try and get that one gun that's going to be perfect and that one holster that's going to be perfect, you know, at the end of the day, I just virtually can guarantee it's not going to work. Like your first try at carrying concealed is not going to work. You're going to have to constantly work through challenges. So I think the other, you know, biggest tip I could give is for new CCWers, you got to just be prepared that when you hit the barriers, the things that just make it hard, when you start realizing how few of your clothes are working and how few of your pants are fitting and how that how many holsters you've tried that are still not working. When you hit all those challenges, just keep trying, just keep working through it. Don't give up. I think you just got to be prepared to just continue to change your lifestyle as much as is necessary.
I will say that, and you're right in that, so true in that, it's taken me years of kind of figuring out what really works for Riley. And even still, I still change things. I've actually been carrying lately more and more outside of waistband, which I never really did before. And part of that was because I'm trying some different clothes that are making that a little bit more feasible. And so I'm just trying something different. I still do a lot of inside waistband as well, but doing a little bit more outside waistband, but I've never really done that before. Here's another thing too. When it comes to holsters, just like it kind of does to an extent, I think with guns, although there are many good quality guns to be had for pretty reasonable prices nowadays. But where it comes to holsters, what you pay for is absolutely what you get. And I think a lot of newer CCWers end up with a lot of holsters in their drawers that don't get used because they start out and they think, oh boy, wow, $70, $80, $100 on a holster. I'm just not going to do that. And so they buy a $20 holster or a $30 holster or sometimes even worse, like the little Uncle Mike's, $15, piece of crap neoprene. Sorry, Uncle Mike's. but that stuff, they'll find out very quickly. Nope, doesn't work. Sucks. And they toss it away. And that's just money down the drain. You run some risk of that with a higher quality holster as well, but I think the risk is far less than it is with a really, really, because a cheap holster, I promise you, you're going to be throwing away before long.
Yeah.
So here's another thing. Besides, we talked about the importance of getting additional training, but training can be had in a lot of ways. Now, hands-on training with a qualified instructor is hugely, there's hardly anything else you can do better than that. But one thing you still can do, and you probably are doing already because, hello, you're obviously listening to this podcast, and that is to, read, listen, and ultimately it's subscribing to quality content. You're going to find, really good articles on blogs. You're going to find awesome podcasts like the Concealed Carry Podcast, gun magazines, various sources that, definitely I'd encourage you to investigate and research and read and study, and then try to apply as much of what you learn as possible. And I think augmenting, hands-on range time, face-to-face with an instructor, with all this other learning you could do outside of that is hugely valuable. But recognize that since it's so easy to put stuff out there on the internet these days, it's also so very easy to get, told and to learn, wrong things. Some of the, YouTubers I see that, think that they're pretty, amazing tactically. They try to show these. I've seen techniques demonstrated on YouTube. I'm just like, oh my just don't, but so take it with a grain of salt, and definitely evaluate and think about, does this make sense what this person is talking about or teaching me? Just ask that question. Does it make sense? And
just check their credibility. It's one thing that they actually know what they're supposed to teach. Another thing is that they're actually good at teaching it. Finding out if they know what to teach usually is an issue of just credentials. Like, who are these people?
Yep, totally. So what's up next, Jacob?
I think a really critical thing is having an attorney and having legal insurance. We've hinted at this a couple of times. We probably need to do a podcast dedicated to this. But if you're going to carry around a gun, it's going to cost you a fortune. Eventually something will happen. You will have to hire an attorney. And it's probably not you shooting somebody. By the way, you've probably been led to believe that you're only going to need an attorney if you shoot someone, and that's not very likely. But the truth is, go grab some criminal defense attorney who specializes in gun-related cases and ask them what percentage of the cases that they handle actually involve the discharge of a gun at another human, and you probably find it's less than 2%. Like 98% of the crap that's going to require you hiring an attorney is that stupid argument you got in with that one guy at the restaurant, or that person who followed you around on the road and called 911 and told the cops that you had a gun, or you know, junk like that. So at the end of the day, if you're going to carry around a gun, you're going to have to eventually hire an attorney. And that means that you better know who to call and you better have a way to pay for it because they ain't cheap.
Yeah, that's excellent advice. I'm going to go with also other things you need to do. You just got your permit. And that is, I think you should put together a plan. And by plan, I mean, it's really a series of plans and a whole bunch of contingencies. But think about the places that you frequent, where you spend, you know, your time, and begin formulating plans as far as how you would respond when you have a deadly force encounter. So you need a plan, and actually probably more than one plan, but you know, you need plans for when you're at home. You need plans for when you're in a vehicle. Maybe you need plans when you're at work, plans for a variety of places, church, grocery stores. Every venue is going to present its own differences and possibilities and challenges for what could and might happen when you are frequenting those venues. And you know, most importantly, though, because we talk about it, how it's most likely that you're going to have an issue, that you're going to need a plan for when you're at home. Start there, focus there, but build outward and start getting plans put together. And then also you need to practice them and drill them. We talked in episode, 20, Jacob, last week about the importance of drilling and, you know, these plans at home for home defense. But also you should practice and drill different things for all these other potential places that you might be. So that's kind of challenging to do, and there's definitely, you know, going back to getting more training and taking additional courses, you're going to find that there are courses and trainings out there that you can attend where they simulate and set up different scenarios that you can practice and train to. But also, too, something that makes it easy, and I'll let you talk about this, that can help facilitate drilling some of these plans, that is having a training pistol, because sometimes you might not be able to use the live gun or do live fire and practice some of these things, particularly like when we're talking about at home. So using something like a CERT pistol or similar can help facilitate this.
Yeah, mission critical. Like I've often wondered if the first handgun I recommend to a new person in our industry should be the CERT. Like before they even buy a real gun, should they first buy a laser simulation gun? I haven't gone there yet. I'm still debating it in my brain if that's really wisdom or not. But I cannot emphasize with enough strength how critical it is that you have a training gun, a gun that you can use without fear of a discharge to get enough repetition, to build enough skills, and to drill the right plans. You just need it. And maybe we emphasize it too much because we also sell them. But the truth is we sell them because we love them and we think they're awesome.
Yeah. Get a training pistol that matches likely what you might be carrying as much as possible. And the reason being is so that you can also use it with a holster, because this is a great opportunity, particularly for your newer CCWers, to practice drawing from and presenting from a holster and doing some of these drills with that training pistol before you move to the live thing. And I do think there is some wisdom to having, you know, and potentially buying a training gun, a training tool before you buy or have the real thing. It's certainly not necessary, but it definitely has some value there. It's something to consider. Definitely, I think there have been people that maybe they have started elsewhere as far as, you know, maybe have a younger person that decides they're going to start getting into guns and self-defense and concealed carry. And maybe they used to do a lot of, you know, airsoft, competitions or something. And so definitely there can be a progression from training weapons and training tools, training aids, to the real life thing. But definitely there's some value for even you experienced shooters. And those you guys, I know there's some of you guys out there that are like, hey, I've been hunting and shooting, you know, hunting rifles my whole life. There ain't nothing you can't teach me is new. But you know what? I'll teach you old dogs a new trick. And the new trick is some of these training aids have huge value where it comes to you practicing the skills that are going to save your life. Finally, I think this is where we're going to probably wrap it up. Jacob, I know you're a member of a gun club, a local gun club here, and I am not yet a member of any particular club. I do frequent a few places. As much as possible, I attempt to get out into the wild and shoot out in the open. It's not as easily achievable as it used to be for me, or as much as I would like it to be. But speak a little bit to the value of a gun club membership.
Yeah, I think the key here is sometimes you might be discouraged from going and going to a live fire facility where you can fire your gun because you might feel like that's expensive or it's inconvenient. But if you buy a membership, and most gun clubs, whether they're private or public, they'll sell you a membership so that you can just pay annually and go anytime you want. And if you do that, a couple things happen. If you're training as often as you should, you're going to save a lot of money. But two, it's prepaid. And emotionally and mentally, you're going to be more inclined to go take advantage of something you've already paid for than you will be to go and spend more money out of pocket. So I think prepaying for an annual membership is going to lead you toward getting more live fire training.
That is a great point there. I definitely see the logic in that. I will also throw out there too that with many gun clubs, you may very well be able to take advantage of, we've already talked about how important it is to continue your training and to actually go through organized official courses with certified instructors. And many gun clubs will have opportunities or at least resources available where that might also give you more of a chance to get and seek and pursue that additional training that is so necessary. So awesome. Man, we've covered a lot today, Jacob. And folks, you might have noticed we lost Brandon. He had to duck out. We got him back to talk about his pick of the week and his coming up next stuff. But before we get to that, today's episode is sponsored by our very own USA Firearm Training's American Gun Law course. What would you pay to sit down with an attorney and ask him all the questions you wanted answers to about gun and self-defense law? Well, you can get all these answers in a 3+ hour online video training course for much less than even an hour's worth of time spent with a criminal defense attorney. We spent 2.5 days and beyond that, a whole lot of prep time and after the fact too, of putting together one of the best training courses on this topic. And we spent these 2.5 days sitting down with one of the best criminal defense attorneys in the area, asking him to explain and break down the laws, and we recorded every single bit of it. This fantastic training is available now for pre-order, and go check it out at usafirearmtraining.com/AGL, Alpha Golf Lima. Okay. USAFirearmTraining.com/AGL, where you'll find, and by the way, during pre-sale, right, Jacob, it's discounted.
Yeah, significantly.
Yeah. So this is your chance to get on the boat first and get a hold of this American Gun Law course for a hugely discounted rate, because once we start selling
we've been talking about this since episode one.
We have. I know. It's been quite a process and a journey. It's going to be awesome. But once we start actually selling this, it goes live, the price is going up. So go get that pre-order taken care of now. USAFirearmTraining.com/AGL. On to picks of the week. Jacob, you're up first.
Yeah, so This is interesting, but you need a good prepper needs a lot of 5-gallon storage buckets. You know what I'm talking about? They're the white things that are food grade that you can store anything.
I've been accused of being a prepper, Jacob, so I am very familiar.
Yes, I'm sure you have lots of 5-gallon storage buckets. These buckets are not cheap, but here's what I'm not just telling you need a lot of them because you do. You just need a ton, but here's the real tip, okay? You can get them for free. You can get as many 5-gallon storage buckets as you want for free. All you have to do is call the grocery store near you, the Safeway, the Kroger brand, the Albert, whatever. Call the grocery store near you. Get asked to be transferred to the bakery, okay? Get the people in the bakery on the phone and say, do you have white, food storage buckets that the icing comes in that you guys use to decorate your cakes that I can come and pick up. These stores, the bakeries, when they buy icing, that they use to top a cake, it comes in these buckets, and they're food grade, high quality buckets, and that's what they buy it in from the companies that make the icing for the cakes, the frosting. So they go through these things like several a day, and they just chuck them in the garbage. So just call them and like, hey, can you set a few aside and can I come and pick them up? I do that about twice a year. I'll go by. Sometimes they'll wash them out for me because they're nice. Sometimes they won't, and I got to take them home and hose them out in the sink with some hot water and wash them down real well. But it's free, 5 gallon storage buckets. It's never failed me. I've lived in a couple different places in the country. Every time I call the grocery store, they always have them. They'll always give them to me for free.
That's a really good tip. You know, I didn't even know that, nor did I ever even think about that. That's brilliant, because the first, as you started like going down your train of thought, I'm like, but you know, like food grade, and then you're like, call the bakery, icing. I'm like, oh, food grade, boom, done. What a great magic tip. That's brilliant. All right, Brandon, your turn. You're up. What's your pick of the week?
My pick of the week is kind of interesting, but it is the Hornady Lock and Load Sonic Cleaner. So the question is, have you ever come home from the range and just not been in the mood to clean your guns ever in your life? Has that ever happened to you, or could you conceive of that ever happening? I know that for me, like some days, yeah, I just don't want to do it. So we actually picked up one of these. We picked up this Hornady Hot Tub 9-liter Sonic Cleaner. And this thing is awesome. It'll fit a whole, 16-inch AR-15 upper in it. But what I really love it for is for my suppressors.
Oh,
because
yeah.
You fill it up with the cleaning solution and you dunk your suppressors in there, and it uses sound and vibration and this cleaning solution to break up the carbon buildup on the inside of your suppressor, and it makes suppressor cleaning super easy. So I have a couple of suppressors that are not user serviceable, and so generally you have to send them in, and there's a fee associated with cleaning your suppressor to the manufacturer.
Yeah.
And I have been able to use them in this, or I've been able to clean them really reliably in this Hornady Hot Tub Sonic Cleaner. The smaller one would be perfect for, like, they make them where you can just like throw a couple of slides in there and it just, just factory cleans everything. They're fantastic.
They are great products. I don't have one, but I've used them. I've seen them used. And I know people that, just like you, absolutely love them.
Yeah.
Awesome. My pick of the week is, this is from The Tactical Medic. And the website is thetacticalmedic.com. And I just got put on to this product, and I'm pretty excited about it. Now, I already use a CERT pistol, and it's got the removable magazines. But I have been through some training courses where we're supposed to bring a, bona fide blue gun. And I've never cared for blue guns because you can't do anything with it other than you grab it and you hold it and you point it. Sometimes it's nice to have something where you can do a little bit more. And in the case of the tacticalmedic.com's blue gun with removable mag, you can do that. So we talked in episode 21. The training tip was practicing reloads. Well, maybe it's a person where you're not able yet to purchase the CERT pistol and get all those, exchangeable mags. This is quite a bit cheaper. It's a blue gun with removable mag. You can buy also the additional mags, and this would be a great, alternative or way that you could practice reloads and do so safely. And so check that out, thetacticalmedic.com's blue gun with removable mag. Coming up next, Jacob, so what's up next on your docket?
Well, you mentioned that the American Gun Law course is available for pre-order. Really, the next thing in my world is to get that thing launched. You're obviously doing all the editing, and you've been working on it for frankly months. We're getting really close now, so I'm getting all the other things lined up and ready, getting it set up on our website. We have a lot of bonuses that we're going to be including when you buy American Gun Law. You're going to get a lot of other cool stuff that we're working on finalizing right now. So that's mission one right now for us as a company, and I'm all over that.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, Brandon, what's coming up next for you?
Next for me is I am working with this FFL here located in Provo, Utah, and we are building a course on how to build and customize your very own AR-15. So this is an election year, and for those of you that are interested, in a few months, you're going to start seeing AR-15 prices go through the roof. So, you know, I know that Colt and Smith & Wesson have, you know, some $500, $600, $700 AR-15s in the really cheap, you know, kind of, or not cheap, but well, yeah, cheap. Cheap and less expensive realm of things. And, you know, the thing that's cool about building your own AR-15 is, number one, it's like Legos for big boys. It's like Legos for grown-ups. And you can take all these different parts and all these different pieces, and you can put them together exactly the way that you want it. But at the same time, like, it's pretty overwhelming because there's all these different parts and all these different pieces. And so what we're doing is we're building an online course that will be through for you guys at USA Firearm Training, that people can log on and take this class and take the tests and learn how to build their own AR-15. And we'll have some kits for some very basic, like, you know, the idea with building your own is, for the most part, you can build an AR-15 that's maybe $300 or $400 more expensive. That, you know, the quality of the firearm that you build is about $300 or $400 more expensive than what you actually paid for all the parts. Plus, you know the thing very intimately, and because you built it and you can customize it, and it's just super, super fun. So that's what we're working on.
Cool. Very excited for you, Brandon. That's definitely something that myself and a lot of people for sure have interest in. And you put it in a good way that hopefully will get people like Jacob even interested in, you know, like you said, it's like Legos for grown-ups.
Yeah. That's the litmus test, man. If I can get Jacob building his own AR-15, everyone will.
Jacob's more likely to just hire you to build me one.
That's all right. That's all right. Exactly. You know? Anyway, Jacob, you got to like Legos, right, man?
I never had any Legos.
What?
That's why. That's the problem right there, Riley. That's the problem right there. He never had Legos.
That's going to be next week's. That's going to be next week's. The man who never owned a Lego. But anyway, okay, nice. And coming up for me, this is kind of unusual, but I'm hoping to do some storm chasing. And last week mentioned in episode 20 that one of the things that Riley likes to do is photography. And I would love to get, number one, my wife would hate this, a photo, a really awesome photo of a tornado. Not up close. I don't need to be up close. I'll keep my distance. I've got a big telephoto lens. But I'd like to get maybe a cool photo of a tornado. Who knows? There's some storms moving through the area today, tomorrow, maybe through the weekend. And hoping I can position myself somewhere and maybe capture a shot or two. That'd be really exciting. If not, some photos of lightning with some awesome clouds, whatever. I'm all over that kind of stuff. Love it. As always, we would like to encourage you to subscribe to the podcast on your mobile or listening device. This is, you guessed it, the surest and easiest way of always having access to the podcast. And you know what? It's going to pop up on your phone or mobile listening device where you're subscribed. It's going to do that first. Like, you might not even notice a new podcast has appeared, a new episode has appeared in the feed if you're not subscribed. So go do that now. If you need help with figuring out how to subscribe, and whether you're using an Apple device or an Android device, we've taken the time to show you how by putting together tutorial videos at usafirearmtraining.com/subscribe-to-podcast. That is subscribe-to-podcast. So check it out, and you'll find the link in the show notes along with all other links of things that we've discussed today. Also, once again, thank you everyone for liking us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. If you haven't, maybe you're new to the podcast, go seek us out, USA Firearm Training. Just search it on Facebook, search it on Instagram, Twitter, whatever, your YouTube channel. And by the way, we have big plans to do way more with our YouTube channel coming up this summer. So go follow us, subscribe, like, etc. Please do so. We'd love to see you there. Also, another great way of interacting with us and communicating with us. I mean, honestly, talking to us on Facebook and stuff is probably one of the better ways or better options. But you can also always contact us by sending us a message via our contact page at usafirearmtraining.com/contact. And finally, thank you for all of your support of this podcast. It is made possible because of the financial support of our customers that visit our site and buy products. It's supported by our product sponsors, and also because, and especially because of the positive feedback that you give us. We hope that you will consider leaving us a review of the podcast on Apple's iTunes. That's currently the only, you know, real sure way that you can leave feedback about the podcast. So go to iTunes, do it there. And as we've been featuring in the last couple episodes, that's your chance to get on the podcast for right now. There's a chance that we'll read and share your feedback on the podcast. And so this week, on this episode, I'd like to feature, this is, boy, our listeners have some of the best usernames. So this one is from Griswold Fubar.
Love it.
And he says, I guess I shouldn't assume it's a he, but anyway, they say, good topics covered. I really look forward to hearing their content. Riley was my safety instructor before I got my CCW. Please keep it up. A little bit of shout out to me, but no, thank you so much, Griswold Fubar. Honestly, from that username, I have no idea which of my students it was that has decided to listen to the podcast and leave the feedback. I'm glad you're enjoying it, Griswold. Jacob, you got any to share?
Yeah, I wanted to share a review from B. Sumpter. Yeah, so maybe his last name is Sumpter. Maybe it's Brad. Thanks, Brad. Brad calls our podcast very useful and fun. Maybe it's Bob. Bob says, this podcast should be considered a requirement for responsibly armed Americans. The topics are informative and entertaining. I never miss an episode, and neither should you. Keep up the great work, guys. You got it, B. Sumpter.
Nice. Thanks for listening. So with that, we're going to say goodbye for now. Until next week, Jacob.
Hasta la vista.
So we'll see you later. Take care. Be safe. Train hard. Catch you next time.
A reminder that laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand applicable laws. USA Firearm Training and the Concealed Carry Podcast strive to share insights and stories about firearm-related incidents and laws, but things could be different where you live, or laws may have changed by the time you listen to this. We cannot be held liable for your actions based on the information shared in the podcast.